Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace.
Well, today we're announcing a new trip, but also showing you a different way of displaying it. So you can see this is the Northern European trip that didn't quite work out, but due to various circumstances, I wasn't able to make it this year. So I'm just going to change that very quickly. So I am planning on doing that trip, but at some point in the future, probably early next year at this stage. So I'm now going to insert a trip that is confirmed because I've bought the plane tickets and so forth, and that is going to Japan in October. Now, unfortunately, at the moment, Squarespace doesn't have a facility to put a table in directly from the menu, but you can put in code, and there are plenty of places you can turn a table into code very, very quickly. So this is what I've done. Switch off the preview code option, and you can see it accepts code to display a table exceptionally easily. You can obviously use a base CSV file as the source of this. And then, well, we have a table. You can see the dates, you can see the locations. Obviously, there'll need to be a few updates as and when we confirm whether we can have subscriber meetups and so forth. But it really is that easy, as with the recommended museums map, to just input code into your website.
So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenfell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show.
Welcome to Karlskrona, where we find ourselves aboard the Swedish Navy's minesweeper Bremon, at least I think that's how it's pronounced. And of course, as is traditional with all of these upper deck doors, we are starting off at the bow. Now, in common with Smaland, which you will have seen earlier in our tour around Sweden, you'll notice that although we are quite high away from the sea, so we have good freeboard, this is not a very heavily sloped bow at all, unlike a lot of US ships, because much like Smaland, Bremon uses the broken deck method, so she has a raised forecastle and then you step down, in this case just behind the bridge superstructure, and continue at a lower level back there, as opposed to the US practice by the Second World War and practice in a number of other navies, which was a continuous flush deck. There are benefits and strengths and weaknesses to each of those practices, but the Swedes went with a broken forecastle deck, and then you have this nice flat forecastle up front, and well, we're about 20-25 feet above the waterline. So there's not a huge amount to see here on the forward part of the minesweeper, with the exception of this small king post crane and of course the anchors and the electronic capstan, the electric winding mechanism for the chains, because she's not that heavily armed, at least as far as guns go. So let's swing around and you'll see what she does have in terms of guns. So here is her forward armament. We have a single 4-inch deck gun. Now she is a minesweeper, but there is a chance that minesweepers might run into hostile vessels, such as say converted merchant ships trying to lay mines, or submarines trying to lay mines, or any number of things that might try and lay mines, and more on the attempted mine laying element later. But she has her 105mm up front. Historically, she would have also carried a second 105mm somewhere else, according to the data sheet that she has, but I don't think it's around anymore. And the other thing that you'll notice, in common with both the Corvette Sackville in Canada and Smaland, her bigger, somewhat later cousin, we have these three rocket rails. Three on this side, three on this side, on the other side there. And those are, of course, to launch illumination flares in order to allow her to engage targets in the darkness, because they essentially act like star shells, but bigger and meaner. I mean, you don't have to worry about elevating this gun really, really high to fire a star shell and then depressing it again to engage the target. You can just fire your HE rounds out of your 105mm or 4-inch gun while these illumination rockets do their job. Very useful if you're going after submarines, and of course, this is Sweden, so primarily operating in the Baltic. There are periods where the sun doesn't really rise in certain elements of the Baltic for months on end, so some method of illumination is very, very important. Especially in this era, when of course she didn't have radar, although she does have one now after refit. This is just behind the gun. You can see her bridge superstructure. It's not the largest. You've got a few little viewports here, but as in keeping with British naval practice, and indeed as we saw on Smaland, Swedish naval practice, she's mostly commanded from an open bridge up there, which gives her a lot more visibility for the command crew, but of course leaves them a bit exposed to the elements, hence why you do also have this lower insulated command section, which is quite useful when it gets rather cold. Being built originally in the early 1940s, Bremen would not have had this equipment at first. This is, of course, radar and sonar screen equipment, but she was refitted with it later on because she had quite a long active service life in the Swedish Navy. And this lives in a compartment in the bridge superstructure, but we're at the back of it. And just on the other side of that rear element of the bridge superstructure is the communications room. So radio equipment of various kinds that allows the ship to talk with the home base and with other ships out at sea. And once again, not the world's largest compartment, but it's very, very important that this is here present, because when new minefields are placed or when minefields are cleared, perhaps a path between mines for the Swedish fleet, she needs to be able to tell everyone pretty quickly. And here we are up on the bridge. Now, I'm not initially showing you the equipment, I'm showing you what a wonderful view you get on this nice open bridge. Now, the important thing to note here is that just forward of the communication and radar-sonar compartments, which we saw lower down, there's also the ship's navigation compartment, as in the chart room, the plotting room. But that is not accessible, and there's a big screen in front of it, which makes it basically impossible to film. So unfortunately, can't really see anything in there. But what we have up here on the main bridge, as some people sometimes like to call the compass platform, we can see here an auxiliary rangefinder. Then coming around, we have various voice tubes. A lot of equipment has been taken off. You can probably see some of the mountings for it. And then we have what's left of the engine telegraph. We have steering and a voltmeter, because electric steering. We have our other remnant secondary rangefinder dash viewfinder, and of course back here we have the flags. And then we have this little compartment, dual on its own, stuck in the middle. And if we go in here, we can see that what this is this is actually steering. Now, this is obviously, steering is technically separate from the navigation or chart room. Got your voice tube and your wheel. But this is kept nice and enclosed, of course, because this allows you to actually actively control and steer the ship in pretty much any weather. So this is a concession to the kind of weather conditions you might run into in the Baltic. And as you can see, you have some windows for visibility up there. Even if everybody else has to abandon this open area outside, because the weather might be a little too foul. There really isn't that much space for multiple redundant systems like you might find on a cruiser or a larger vessel, simply because it's a very, very small ship. You do, however, have this one further lookout and command point, which, as you can see, has the remnants of a few systems up there, but unfortunately, we cannot climb it. And just behind, there is a very simple mast. And nowadays, that contains a few bits of radar equipment. Now, we've just come down this ladder from the forecastle area, and you can see immediately there is this nice long rail that we're following. Now, I did say that Bremen was a minesweeper, and that is correct. But some of you might be wondering, therefore, why are we approaching so many mines? We have little mines, we have bigger mines, we have an even bigger mine that appears to be undergoing some sort of mine-based mitosis. It isn't really, it's just a slightly more complicated mine. So what gives? Why does the minesweeper have so many mines on it? Well, the simple answer is that although Sweden was quite the active little country when it came to trying to take over other people's land back in the Age of Sail, as the time went on into the 19th and then into the 20th century, Sweden had very much become a heavily armed neutral power. Now, how does that relate to mine sweeping and mine laying? Well, flip this around, and I can now talk to you again. So, you can see the mines. Well, Sweden took the perspective of, yes, we're going to be neutral, but they also realized that the only way you can really enforce your neutrality is to be too difficult for other people to turn around and say, no, no, actually, you're on our side, whether you like it or not. Hence the heavily armed part. Now, by the time of the 20th century, and even by the late 19th century, mine warfare was a huge part of naval strategy, especially in somewhere relatively confined, like the Baltic and the pass between Sweden and Denmark. And so, if other people were going to lay mines, potentially offensively against Sweden, if they chose to dislike them, or just generally speaking, then the Swedish Navy would need to be able to clear those mines. Now, why do I say they might need to clear the mines even if no one's laying mines actively against Sweden? Well, firstly, they might want to ensure free passage for Swedish merchant ships. But secondly, mines do have a habit of not staying where you want them to be. So while the Swedish general approach to other people mining the Baltic was, could you not, they realised that that really wasn't going to fly with big powers like Russia, or if Britain or France decided to come into the Baltic for another round of the Crimean War. And so they would need minesweeping capability to clear up mines that might drift into their areas of operations. And of course, once hostilities were over, even if mines had been laid in areas that weren't really Sweden's concern, they would still want the capability of going in and clearing those pretty quickly, because the sooner the mines were cleared, the sooner trade could resume, and Sweden was very heavily dependent on trade, still is to a certain extent. And hence, the need for a lot of minesweepers. But why, then, does the minesweeper have mine rails? Well, the flip side to that is that if someone was going to actively come after Sweden, well, Sweden has a good chunk of the Baltic coast to its command, and that's very shallow waters, very broken up coastlines with lots of inlets and fjords and isles and islets and so on and so forth. And this limits the approaches that you can use to actually get at significant Swedish targets, like Stockholm or where we are here in Karlskrona. Of course, it also limits how your ships, particularly your merchant ships, can get into and out of your own ports. So, Sweden needs the capability to lay its own minefields defensively in case somebody comes after it. And hence, every Swedish ship that was large enough to in some way, shape or form carry mines at all was fitted with mine rails, even if they might not need them. That applies to ships even smaller than the Bremon, even though she is technically a minesweeper, she could also lay mines. It applies to the much more advanced, more modern Cold War era fast attack craft that's sitting behind us. It applies to Smaland, as you've already seen. It applied to everything. Every Swedish vessel that could carry a mine was expected to carry mines, because if worse came to worse and Sweden had to actively defend itself from an aggressor, they could very, very quickly render the Swedish coastal waters extremely uninviting for anyone who, let's say, didn't have a large contingent of minesweeping vessels. And even if they did have a large contingent of minesweeping vessels, they would be trying to sweep mines in waters the Swedish Navy knew very well and could dominate with a mixture of coastal defences and fast attack craft. And so, Bremon is, you could say, neither fish nor fowl, or you could say is both poacher and gamekeeper. Now, back here, on the aft end of the Bremon, we have the main equipment that she would have used in her primary job. And that, of course, is minesweeping. So we have a pair of paravanes. Now, you may have seen some examples of paravanes scattered around various other museum ships that we've looked at. However, this is probably the most complete set that I've seen, at least on a museum ship that I've been on, because a lot of ships will have one paravane somewhere just, you know, to show how it would work, or perhaps if they've got more than one, they'll be put somewhere, you know, off the beaten track for so the tourists can look at them, but hopefully not trip over them. Whereas back here, they're pretty much where they would be in operation. So we've got a paravane here, we've got a paravane there, and as you can see, they're kind of like small torpedoes with this wing, so that will allow them to pull out once they're on their cables. The camera's actually sitting on one of the big cable coils that the paravanes would have run on, and the idea is of course, that these two will fan out to either side of the ship. Now, unlike a big battleship where the paravanes will be dropped off of the bow, a minesweeper can, and as in this case obviously does, operate them aft, because minesweepers are small, shallow draft vessels, and realistically the distance between Bremon's bow and here, is combined with their shallow draft, means that the profile of the ship that could be hit directly by a mine is basically negligible. I mean, obviously minesweepers could and did hit mines, but this is a much more efficient way of doing it for such a small vessel as compared to the upfront nature of a battleship that might be 600-800 feet long or more. And as the cable pays out, it's a nice big steel cable, you'll hopefully see that in some pictures later, if it caught the anchor chain or anchor cable of a mine, then of course, because these paravanes would be swept out and back, they would run down the cable towards the paravane, and it would feed into here, where there's essentially a big box cutter, which would slice through the offending item, and the mine, now freed from its anchor, would pop up and would be able to be destroyed. Now, because of course she is a minesweeper and she's designed for this, she has a pair of nice big cranes with these nice big grabbing claws, so she can grab and offload and onboard the paravanes very, very quickly, which is quite important for the work that she does. She's also got a number of different types of floats here. You can see these two sort of pontoon yellow floats, and what you can't quite see in your camera view probably just here is another much shorter version of a paravane. It almost looks like a comically fat bomb with a wing, but no box cutter. So there'll be some pictures, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And our final view of the day is this. This is a pair of 40mm Bofors, of course, guns, mounted on a pedestal on the aft portion of the ship, just forward of the mine clearing equipment. And of course, this serves two purposes. This, along with the 105mm up front, forms the ship's self-defense capability against air threats. But also, this position, as you can see, being on the central pedestal, can fire in essentially a, well, about 300 degree arc. This is also what would primarily be used to take out the mines that she revealed with the paravane system. And then if I come back a little bit, unfortunately you can't go up there, you'll get a little bit of a context as to where these guns sit in the ship's overall operation. So there you go, there's the mines, there's the cable runs, and there is the pedestal with those 40mm guns. So, being a relatively small minesweeper, apart from the funnel, which is just there, that's pretty much all there is to see on the upper decks of Bremon. So if you want to see more, well, either keep watching this video, we'll have a look around the rest of the museum, or come see for yourself and go aboard, go below decks, etc., at the Karlskrona Naval Museum. It's absolutely worth your time, because after all, this is just one of three large museum ships they've got here. We saw the fast attack craft very briefly, and the training ship, they both live that way. And then this whole museum building is a multi-level naval museum, and there's a tunnel underneath it all where you can see the wreck of a first-rate ship of the line, assuming that the water is calm enough. So, see you later.
So, of course, huge thanks to Karlskrona Naval Museum for allowing me aboard the Bremon to do some filming. And as mentioned in the video, there's plenty more. There's a whole history of Swedish submarines in the museum, as well as looking back even further to the age of sail and so forth. So a couple more videos from Karlskrona easily coming over the next few months. Thanks for watching, and hope to see you again in another video.